Station number 14982, J Brown, Reel 8.
Mr. Brown, Reel 8.
Yes,
you said you got embarkation leave. How long was that for?
A week. 7 days. That was it, inclusive of travelling. For 7 days. And anyway, you had your 7 days, you said your fond farewells, back to Honiton, and it was not a matter of about 3 weeks after that when we did leave. But in the meantime, as I said, the Devons had a part of the barracks just at Acadia. And they had so many NCOs out of the Devon Regiment there. And what they did, they moved an ATS unit in. Quite a lot of them and all, you know. And these NCOs were putting them through the paces. Well, it would have been better down out at all. They put a strand of barbed wire dead centre right through the bloody camp. What that was supposed to do, I do not know. Because they moved in on the Wednesday. You saluted for your pay on the Friday morning. Well, everybody did bang in the Honiton village. We gets down in the Honiton village, back end, blackout. You couldn't get a pint glass, you couldn't get out. Choked up with a bloody ATS. My God, what a set of lasses. You want a danger money. They should have sent them abroad instead of us, you know. When I come out at night time, I'll not use the word, they're having a wee in the gutter, you know, this sort of thing. We're glad to get back to camp, you know, it was supposed to be a tough infantry unit. But there's two big gymnasiums there, and they're using one, they're organising dances, like, which is a good thought, like. But naturally, those sort of relationships crept in. So I've never been much of a dancing man. We didn't want to have been down the village road and come back anywhere. And our living hut was up next to the railway line. It was all barbed wire. You couldn't cross the railway line unless you want to knock a hen off, like, for your supper. But decided to have a shower. And there weren't proper baths. They were nice and neat, but there were stand-up showers, each individual. You had a curtain along. Went down this night, there was been a dance on. Went down the bloody big shower. You couldn't get in one shower. There was a couple in every shower with a bloody curtain pulled along.
Not showering?
Eh?
Not showering.
Well, I hardly think so. But anyway, I suppose that's human nature. That's great. Youthful out. And that sort of thing. But there was really no harm done. And
Were the people around Honiton a little bit more friendlier than where that you'd come
some
from?
Some of them were, yes. Aye. A lot of them tried to be. As I said, with a like a more farming community and such as that. It wasn't densely populated for a start, like. There weren't enough people to be for you all to have a friend, like. And one or two girls in the village were friendly. Mostly good lasses, like, to be fair, like.
How did the farmers feel when their hens disappeared? You said that you knocked one off.
Well, it was a bit of a racket working, see, and yeah. I was always taught, like, as a kid, if you ever join the army, like, always have a friend in the coke house and have a friend in battalion stars, you see, why, that sort of thing happened. And but these liver nuts, still a corporal, the sergeants had their own quarters, who were up the other end. And I was in charge of the hut, where the big huts, so we had our platoon was in one side. When you see four Bren guns, about four Mantra Bren, 22 would tack it up. The cooks had the other end, so we were laughing, you say, and lights out, was 9:30, was it? Aye, this, that and the other. The orderly officer used to come round most, and I just took his end of the door. Everyone present, corporal? Yes, sir. My half the buggers was out, like, you know what I mean? But you take a chance, you didn't worry. And the cooks would be coming, they were working a racket, because they were able to take tea and that down into the village, you know what I mean, like? And without coming through the main gate, there was ways you could get through, you say. Everybody knew this. So maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, in would come the cooks, blackouts up on the how we lads here, you know, the bloody sea pies and all kinds, you know. 2 o'clock in the morning, we're living like lads. And anyway, that was it.
You were issued with your kit for another climate. Did this start the rumours off again as to where you were going, or were the...
Well, I guess in the Middle East, I think everybody knew, like, we weren't sure till we left Aden. We put various stops into a later study. When we pulled out Aden, when we pulled out of Durban, South Africa, we picked New Zealanders and various blokes from the Middle East up. There'd been a Scot and Italian prisoners from Wavell's Push down. So we knew they weren't going to India. So obviously the Duchess of Richmond, who wrong, was going to the Middle East, they were going there.
Did the local people come to understand where you're going before you left?
In Honiton, that way.
In Honiton?
Well, from my own point of view, nobody ever asked us. No. The little pubs a lot used to get in, you know, they were, but they were enjoying a drink and they're trying to be friendly, where do you belong and all that. You know, the crap was good. But I can never remember anybody asking any questions, personal questions about what are we doing, where are we going, what have you got out of that. If they had, I would have twigged on, like, you know, I'd had the watch to.
What are your memories of the move when you actually to move? Because it was in the middle of winter.
It was in the winter, sorry.
When you moved?
No, it was when we went abroad. No, it was back end of April. It was April, wasn't it? Was it April? Yeah, no. No, it wasn't. The memories. Well, it was a bit rough and ready. Like, we got these when they decide to go, you're not selling a rush. Like, everybody's ready, off we went. Well, we marched the Honiton Station, the county station now, we were up on the top there. The rifle companies at the march there, we had a whole train load, you know. And we embarked on the train.
Were the civilians there to see you off?
No. It was, if I remember correctly, it was... That'd be bothered. Oh, must have been late afternoon, was it? Because we travelled in the dark all night. That's right, we travelled in the dark all night. I've no idea where we're going, like, but we knew we were going to where there was a ship, like. And when dawn broke, we pulled into dockside at Gourik, see? And there was badges there, the big ships was out in the deep water, and the badges was there, straight on these badges. And over here, we were outnumbered by red caps. There was nobody who was going to change his mind and go home, you know what I mean? Like, I said, I left that. And the lads were saying, get your bloody selves on here, and all this, you know. And they were just giving it that leg. And we got on these badges, got on to, never been on a ship as big as that before, none of us. We went to France on smaller ships, you know. They sorted out about four decks down, Christ almighty. And I used to, I used to have visions of a ship would be about that thick on its sail, you know. I'd imagine a tin fish going through there like a four feet or. Anyway, now the lads are quite happy, and rocking and rolling. And what were there, a day, the next night, something like that. But you made yourself at home. There was mammocks, and there was bunks, there was all kinds. It was pretty tight, you know. There must have been about 5,000 on board. There was a lot of RAF blokes. They were getting off of Durban, they were going to Canada for training. You know, a few hundred of them, you know. They were already on board. And... anyway, I've never been troubled with seasickness, thank God, mind. I hadn't been to sea except for France, which is now. But we went to bed this night, it was dark, and the ship was just rolling in the continent. Woke up early hours, it was rolling, creaking and groaning. I said, oh, someone on here. We got to go up steps, and up these steps, up there, got on the deck. All you could see was a convoy, as far as I could see, in bloody water. I said, we're away with team here. Great. So the mess deck, there was about three decks down. It was like a super greenhouse, hot, you know. Well, I'm not kidding, there was 75% of breakfast was boiled eggs. There's nobody down for breakfast, they're all seasick. So well, I wasn't like, but then there wasn't. I was down at about six boiled eggs. That was great. I thought, well, these guys pull around and be eating the table tops, which they were. Went on for days, you know. Some of them, until they got over it. And, in fact, nature being what it is, with one or two went missing, hell of a big ship, you know, you're talking about 25,000 tonne or something like that. If you went to somebody that's really say, find the centre of the ship, because he's found, you got the least way up and the least way down, you know, half a car now, one or two of them, found them there, white as ghosts, you know. You had to drag them out, drench them with bloody seawater, and give them a right going to, and shake them about a bit, force a drop of tea down their throat, oh, it's coming up. But in a few hours, they'd got over it. Nobody died with it. But we got the convoy out, and I didn't know how we would probably be going around the top and the coast of Ireland. No, well, it's on that side, isn't it? And the bloody alarm went, these wolves. Four engine things were operating from France, trying to eat out like. Everybody below decks would. Me and Piper, he's from Edinburgh, we stopped on the deck like. We weren't supposed to, but they were dropping the bombs and the destroyers were throwing everything over at them, you know. They got neither idea of the ship. The bloody bombs seemed to be about that ship. You know, not the use of like that. I don't know whether it was some kind of landmine. But they're hitting out anyway, and then obviously we. We got out of their range. And life on board ship is pretty monotonous, like, isn't it? So many of you. But we're keeping as fit as you could. We had tug of wars, we had exercises, we had this, we had that. They kept you going all the time, you know, which was a good thing.
What was the.
Boxing matches, eh?
You said that there was hammocks and bunks. What were the sleeping conditions like where you were on the ship?
Oh, like sardines. Every deck would be the same. Well, like sardines, you know. But they insisted on you. There was plenty of. There was quite a lot of bathrooms, like, with proper bathing. But with seawater, we were using, like, obviously, like, which didn't make no difference. The bloody salt didn't hurt you, there wasn't that much of it. And.
What was the food like on the boat?
The food wasn't bad, to be honest, like, as I say, there was just enough, like, when the seasick men pulled themselves together. They were really clamming, you know. But you got boiled eggs and such as that, and the bread was baked on board. The bread was baked on board. It was good white bread and such as that. There was nobody starving. And they had a bit of a canteen. Oh, we made the crew. We fell in with two blokes, merchant navy, like, two Manchester lads. Then the other way around. They'd been drunk a few times. They'd been in Durban, you see. So... We had a bloke called Coke in our platoon. He liked a game of cards. I don't know whether he cheated or not, like, we probably did. So we pulled together, wasn't much we had, and it was a continual game of brag went from leaving, what do you call it, to getting to Durban. We called in the freight down, by the way, but I think the game was still going. Coke, he's had nothing on his sleeve. But when we got into Durban, what he. You had about 56 quid or something like that. It was a lot of money then, you know. But anyway, that was the future. We got filling the time with extent, and we were keeping pretty fit. To be hollow, there was a lot of men, like. And I said the food wasn't bad, such as that. Spent a lot of time watching the flying fishes and such as that, you know. And each ship had a bloody big radio on, you know, and they're giving you news occasionally. We got a good and the hood had been sunk. And the bloody German battleship was on the loose. I said, oh my God. So we had about six destroyers. We had the aircraft carrier Exeter that had been in the Battle of the River Plate. And what a small aircraft carrier. I don't know what to call it. It wasn't a big one. But the aircraft carrier, six destroyers left us and all sailed in one direction. Obviously, they're going to, if they could find them, they're going to have to be... An interception, but if you'd got among that convoy, you'd had a whale of a time. But anyway, he didn't, and we pulled into Freetown Harbour.
What happened there at Freetown? Did you get off the ship?
We didn't get off, no. You got in for refueling and rewatering, such as that. And that's the first time we saw the bum boats. Works coming out there, little canals out of the front, I'm doing it all painted up, you know. And they were selling mostly fruit, you know, they'd barter anything for fruit. And other convoys had been out, the language, you know, all they could speak was like filthy language, you know, they didn't know they were doing it. And I'll give you an F and so and so for and then they finished the Navy got on the job with hydrants and washed the buggers away, they couldn't get near the ship, you know. But it looked, You could go on down there, the sun was gleaming, the jungle sweeping the way up the heights right round, you know. It was picturesque, but I wouldn't want to land in there, so I could imagine it'd be rotten with mosquitoes and everything. But a bit logheads with the French at the time, the Vichy French, and two or three times they sent a couple of planes over, just probably taking photographs. And the aircraft guns was firing, well, it didn't hit them, like. And then we pulled out of there for just about an hour out and went through one area. Christ, there was nothing but wreckage and barrels and that. If somebody had been torpedoed, you know. But you kept getting with intensive training about your board decks. Everybody had the board decks, you know. Each sat and the boats were there to tell you everything and exactly what you had to do. You trained and trained and trained. But you're finishing getting about sometimes three alarms a day. They're all false alarms, but you rush to your boat station. I suppose that was good, like, good training.
Well, it was a long journey, was it?
It took, with calling the freight down, going right away out to dodge the U-boats, having to call it Durban. Of course, we stopped there 5 days, then into Aden. Took 7 weeks to get to the Middle East.
Was boredom a problem?
Well, not, I suppose in some cases, but no, there was a certain tenseness being there. You didn't know whether there was going to be a real U-boat attack or whatever, you know. And I never heard anybody say I'm bored of bloody wick, you know. There were, well, you say you're young and strong, you knew you were going somewhere, you had a job of work to do. But anyway, when we pulled into Durban, the experience that, right away up that river. It looked like skyscrapers. They weren't, they were pretty high buildings, though, at the distance, you know. What a place. Knee blackout and out of that, you know. And as we pulled in, the battleship Barham had been badly hit in the Mediterranean. She got sunk later on, but she'd been repaired in Durban Harbour, and she'd been loading ammunition on when we passed it, because these pretty big shells had been dropped in. And anyway, we got the dockside in Durban. That was the first recognition we had of this apartheid. Oh my God, these bloody big strapping niggers, you know, running up and down the dockside, shouting or begging for anything, like this, that, and the other, like, you know. And these bloody South African police must have been 7 foot high, you know. They bloody rhino whips, I was lashing them, you know. And our lads were shouting, "Get away, you big useless so and so," and all that. We didn't realise. And they were telling us what they were doing with us, eh? But anyway, there 5 days. You were allowed out each day in the morning, but you had to be back at midnight, you know. And there must have been a mile and a half of cars when you got out the dog gates, people wanting to make you to home. They're really kind. Apart from these police, they're really kind. You know, they'll give you anything, aye? And there was 3 places in Durban. You went in, and the Coloureds was waiting on and such, and then the washing up. But the white South African girls was actually waiting at the tables, and everything was free, food and that, as much you could bloody eat. It was good. They're very friendly.
Did you get involved with anyone yourself? Did any of the civilians take you out?
No way. A bit of booze is a whole lot, you know what I mean, like. And there was only lager beer bottles, which was rubbish, but you could get brandy, worked out about the ends of glass, you know, and such as that. But for people are friendly, you talk to them, you know, let's be understand, like, what, they want to show you the sights for the car and such as that. A hell of a lot did that, but it wasn't our thing, like. But called in one little shop where the first day out, we're walking down into the town, and it was like a grocer's come, what have you. It wasn't a supermarket, there wasn't any supermarkets then. First 2 lasses that belonged to Gateshead. They'd been there a few years, like. They'd emigrated there. And oh, they're quite friendly. They wanted a few pies and had to start off a change of diet. And they give us them, like. And they arranged to see them that night. They were going to attack us up and dance. Well, we didn't turn up. We were giving it the booze. And the middle day were there. The third day was a Sunday. There was a parade next morning on the sports arena, you know. And it was their winter, July. But by Christ, it was warm. It was pretty lovely, you know. What the sun was like, I don't know. Shirt sleeve parade, you know. And around this, that, and the road. The dockside. We had no bands on out, mind. We had no bands. But the Martian and I left by, they must have looked smart, you know. This was great. But it was a kind of trek down to this sports ring, and the Bishop of Durham was going to say his peace. So we had to go through a residential area. Lovely little houses and verandas, you know. All these South African lasses. But they were beauties, though, standing there with just bathing costumes on, you know, and this the minimum. Why they was giving what for. And they were throwing fruit to the lads. There was bananas, oranges, apples, and every bloody thing. Well, within inside of a few hundred yards, it was chaos. Every bug was peeling bananas, and the sergeant major was going mad. But it happened before with other units, obviously. And everybody was going mad. And anyway, they let it go at that. You know what I mean? They couldn't know nothing about it. But anyway, we went on to the sports field. Bishop of Durham said his peace, like, and then we marched back again. And then did a bolt into town, you know. There was one particular night where these two blokes from Manchester were at mine. They knew the Bow's nice spots were. Streets, this particular street, White's Cape out, you know. There's only a rope across, like. White's Cape out and this, that and the other. Quite a clever lads, like, you know. Hey, we'd go over there, we'll have a look down here. These two matlows and all, you know. Oh, we went. But I wasn't going to go about a couple hundred yards down. Just more, hell of a size. It was like a barn. That bloody noise in there. We'll be in here. I went in there. I'll never forget the experience. If there was one, there must have been 500 blacks in there. No jibber. Whoosh! In 3 seconds, you could hear a pin drop. We didn't realise the situation, honestly. We didn't realise it was as bad as that. They couldn't believe there was whites walked in there. I think they must have thought we were coming in like to take some damage. And we were making our minds, well, we're going to have a drink while we're in, like said we did. The door bust open. There's about a dozen of these South African police. Yeah, they were all 10 foot high, yeah, proper. The language, the frog masters, you know, put away in the arms and ammunition. But anyway, we couldn't afford it, but it would have been the wrong thing. And they hoid us over this bloody way. And the language they used to what they were going to do with the quarters in there again, like. First, we're in the wrong, you know what I mean? I thought, that's pretty ashamed. They were fighting through, we're getting out there, and these buggers inside us up. Great. It was our own fault, we were stupid. We didn't realise, you know, it was somebody else's country. But anyway, the fifth day, that was it.
You didn't like what you saw, the way they were treating the blacks?
It was terrible, aye. I mean, there was quite a few employed as colours as traffic cops, you know. And there was one going there. The Zulus coming down from the kraal were rickshaws, you know. They were making a few bobs, poor little bobs, only pennies. There were fancy headdresses on, and line cloths, and bits of ribbon tied round the knees, you know. Sturdy lads, and they pull 3 or 4, you know. And Durban's mostly flat, like, there's little banks here and there. And if you want to get from here to B for a few coppers, they were good, you know. So we're making our way down into the centre of town this year, and there's a bit of a gradient going down like that. And then you turned left, it was like a crossroads, and we turned left. But anyway, there's a rabbit off here. There's a rickshaw coming down. He has 3 sailors in the back, and one of them must have been 19 stone. They're drunk as hell and shouting, you know. And I was standing up shouting, drinking out the bottles. And this Zolo's coming down, and had a trick. They'd run a few yards, and they would freewheel with the legs in there, and then they'd come down again. I was noticing this bloke, he went up, every time he went up, it took a bit harder getting down. I said, hey, watch this, they're going with something down. He went up this time, he didn't come down, did he? And this coloured, there's a coloured cop on the crossroads, he hit him. Well, what a bloody chaos. These 3 sailors are down here playing hell, my arms dropping. Finished up, this coloured cop, he had a Zulu on the bottom trying to bring his head through the road.
And you were there 5 days?
We were there 5 days, aye. And then we pulled out.
You mentioned that you took New Zealanders on board. Was there some problem with the New Zealanders and the accommodation on the boat?
Well, if there was, but under my knowledge, no. Why, there shouldn't have been, because we'd left a few hundred RAF men there for they were going to Canada for advanced training, like. If there was, it could have been true of mine, I wouldn't know it, you know, like, it's a hell of a big ship, and we didn't even say the news there. I thought you were saying what you took no notice, so we stowed away in a corner, you know.
You didn't get to mix with them at all?
No,
on the boat.
Great blokes, mine, later on, when we met them in the desert. Great division, the 2nd New Zealand Division.
So you went on back onto the boat and obviously sailed on. What happened next?
Well, we next stop would be, had we been to Aden then? No. Well, out the Red Sea, of course. Next thing, we're heading for Aden. We didn't know that lake. It was just a refueling point, mind, the paradox of Aden.
What was the condition of the ship now that you're really in very hot climate?
Oh, it was warm. By Christ, it was. It was comfortable. You spent as much time on deck as you could, you know, you see. And it got worse, especially in the Red Sea. But anyway, in the meantime, we still had the Exeter with us, you know. And they had a... Mr. Walrus, they call it. It's a catapult aircraft for reconnaissance and such as that, I suppose. And he used to do practice flights. He'd done them a dozen times before. He used to catapult them off. It was good to watch. And he used to have a bloody big, not a balloon, but a canvas thing, hundreds of yards behind him, trailing, you know. They'd give the anti-aircraft gun as practice, you see. Anyone forcing in any, he used to practice dive bombing and such as that. And he went full into dive and they didn't pull out. And into the water, they were both killed, like. Aye. And the Exeter stopped to pick them up, and the convoy carried on. We didn't stop. But anyway, next day, that they must have recovered the bodies, because that burial ceremony, approached each ship in the convoy, you know, 2 minutes silence, and then all this sort of thing. But it was, they lost the plane, and then when she left, and she left us in the Middle East, went on to Far Eastern waters, and the Japanese sunk it, didn't they?
And you sailed up the Red Sea?
We sailed up the Red Sea. Man, that was hot, like, you know. There was one or two getting prickly heat and all that. Yeah, not many would pull up the Red Sea, and then the first thing we saw the mountains. That must have been Sinai, you know. Now we pulled into Suez Harbour, and it was turning dark then. There was us, our ship, there was three of the same size. The Duchess of Richmond, the Georgic, and another one, I forget the name of the other one.
What one were you on? What ship were you on?
The Duchess of Richmond, aye. And anyway, they were getting you off for the dead of night. And there were pretty barges, Christ, from here across the road, you know. They were piling them on, about 100, said, it'll sink, it'll shake, you little thing. The ship was, you know. And they seem to be going 90 miles an hour, that wouldn't be. And they're getting you the land, you know, land you on the sat and the other. Just land on the open dunes. And they had them up by dawn. And anyway, the South African water ice columns was there, empty. The South African drivers, they were working, you know, saying, you won't be long to get sun brown like us and all this, you know. And, they're picking us up, you know, as fast as we're getting off the ships, they were taking us to, a few miles, to Cassassin. That was a staging area, like, and hundreds of tents, you know, right round the area.
What were your first impressions of Egypt?
Very, very hot, and struck the eye heaven, you know what I mean, like, and we offloaded... there's a village called Cassassin. Why, when you call it a village, you know, oh dear me, and a bloody stench. My heart went out to the people, a lot of them were despising them, you know. But my, I thought, well, why should human beings have to live like that? You know, there was no sanitary arrangements, there was bugger all. And no wonder they were rotten with disease. And the bloody kids running around with flies, eating eyes out, and oh dear. But I'd get sympathy for them, like. But it was our country, like, but I mean, anyway, they got organised there. The food wasn't extra good then, they were supplemented with oranges and such as that, like, because they get plenty, you know, from Cyprus and such as that, like. But you got into training again, you know, to get your brick into heat gradually, you know, and it wasn't long, I mean, pretty hardy blokes and this, that and the other. Now we thought we'd be going up in the desert. We're only there. How long would we there? Not long, Christ. A week? Really not much more. And,
what time of the year would it be?
July. August, I would say. I mean, I could be wrong, but could have been August. September, August, No, it could have been September. Must have been September, because we actually went to Cyprus. We thought we said, hey, we're really fighting the Orkney, like we're going straight in the desert. And I think everybody in the war office thought that, but didn't. The Orkney was in Chad. The Crete had fell, and they thought Cyprus the next jump off of the German airborne. But he'd lost so many men on Crete, although he took Crete, his strength had gone. Of course, we didn't know that, but they dropped us onto Cyprus,